Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Authorities are desperately searching for a killer accused of going on a rampage.
The search for a possible serial killer.
An urgent manhunt for a man authorities believe is behind a triple killing spree.
Police here speculating that a possible serial killer may have struck again.
I told her to get out of the car, and that's when she became afraid, and then I shot her.
Crime Corner.
Crime
Corner.
Crime Corner. Do you?
Where a kid can be a kid.
Do you like crime? Guys, did you have some fun last night? I think we need to address it.
Yes.
Joel got me super, super drunk last
night. No, you got me drunk.
No. Okay, that might be true.
You were pouring shots. And I was surprised. Normally, I'm the one that talks him into drinking with me. And
yeah.
He was refilling the shots as soon as they were gone, and I was proud of you.
Well, because I take it seriously.
Yeah, you're not...
This is a passion for me.
Drinking?
It's become a passion.
I'm jealous because you guys had a fun little old school dirtbag night, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was it was a mess from start to finish.
You smoked sticks.
Smoked cigarettes.
You smoked a real stick, dude.
Joel got me to smoke a single heater.
Are you smoking again?
Oh, yeah. I'm back.
Oh, you're back, baby.
Got a pack of cigarettes in my backpack right now. You want to smoke?
Really?
Chain smoking all day, every day. It's like me back when I was in California.
In the morning, even?
I haven't smoked cigarettes.
No.
Remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
That's when you're really back.
That was my favorite part of the day when I was a smoker. Like, I still miss it. Waking up first thing in the morning, like staggering outside, hacking up a lung, smoking a cigarette, drinking some coffee. It made me feel good.
Exactly.
That was my daily version of going to the gym, but I'm not a nerd.
I like it. Samesies. Samesies. So look, I've got a newborn, so I'm not sleeping. You guys got
alcohol.
Wasted, old school wasted. How late do you guys stay up, you reckon?
I have no
idea.
Was
it a threesy or foursies?
Yeah, it must have been.
Ooh, later?
It was late enough that I was so drunk I didn't even bother looking at the clock. I just staggered in and
I fell asleep sitting up.
Yeah. I had to get up and push him over while he was on the couch because he was snoring so loud. And I couldn't fall. I was so drunk, but I still couldn't fall asleep because he was snoring so loud.
Did you guys like do stuff together?
No, separate rooms.
Do you know
rooms.
What I mean? Like, you what know, you if, mean, you're, do stuff? If you're that drunk that late, did you guys kind of like? You know what I mean? Just two dudes
you know,
in the
that,
night.
That was the most times that I've seen Joel naked from the waist down in years.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I ripped his shower curtain off, threw it on the ground in the living room, and
tried to take a shit on it.
Okay, true story. It went from like a cute little dirtbag night to now I'm like,
it got weird.
It's okay that I wasn't there. I was feeling a little bit. jealous for a second.
No, nothing to be jealous about.
But now it feels like you guys were getting out some deep-seated issues.
Yeah, we're both ashamed of ourselves. And the entire drive over here to the studio, we couldn't make eye contact. This is the first time that we've actually talked to each other since last night.
Oh,
we can only do it through the mics.
I love it. I love it.
But this is like therapy for us.
This is therapy. And I think this is the perfect episode of Crime Corner, our new show. Jesse Wiseman's Crime Corner makes me very uncomfortable to say.
Joel and I both insist.
You guys insist, which is
Jesse Wiseman's Crime Corner.
It's the only way that I'll do anything like that is if other people are like, no, you're so pretty. And I'm like, no, I can't. Don't take a picture. And they're like, you are so perfect.
I don't want to name the show after myself. Should the name go before or after the title?
Before. I had it just ready. I'm like, before, obviously, bigger, too. I need the letters bigger.
And here's some sketches I've already made.
Yeah. And if you guys were just kind of, I don't know, wondering about the thumbnail, these are just a couple portraits of me, if you want to turn those into a thumbnail. But I thought the tagline could be, nobody puts Jables in the corner.
I love that.
You like it?
I love it.
Not a huge Dirty Dancing fan, but that line, you know, I think it'll work. It's just cheesy enough, right?
I don't think anybody is a Dirty Dancing fan.
No, right?
It's a terrible movie.
I was thinking watching that movie as a mom is a totally different situation, and I'll tell you why. That little fucking baby, was that her name?
Yeah.
She was a nightmare child.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just running around with this, like, old dance instructor guy.
Just whoring around with Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, like, well, she went with her rich-ass family to this place, and she found, like, this old guy that lives on the grounds, right? And dances sometimes. And she, like, insisted that her dad let her fucking have sex with him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And that
grooming.
He needs to be cool with it. Dad! She's 16, man. It's not like she's, like, a grown woman.
So he's a pedophile.
Well, Patrick Swayze turned her into a woman.
Yeah, it's a pedophile story, you guys.
Whoa. No, he was full blown grooming because in that movie, Patrick Swayze was of age. He was an adult.
Yes. I'm going to say at least mid 20s. Right, in real life, he was older than that.
Yeah.
And she was a little bit older in real life. What they were playing was like full on grooming pedophile ages.
Yeah.
So romantic.
He's horrified.
Yeah, it's a disgusting movie on multiple levels.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch it again.
So, like, when you first watch it, you're like, her dad fucking sucks. You know what I mean? Nobody puts baby in the corner. Why wouldn't you let him fuck that guy? And then as you get older, you're like, on the dad's side.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, why did you not 100%. Smack the shit out of her?
Dude, somebody should have gone and fucking stomped a mud hole in Patrick Swayze's ass for being a pedophile.
The cops should have been involved. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, during that dance scene, right before she was about to be like this, the cop should have come and just, like, put his arm, and then she falls on the ground, right? But, like, it's not a cute story, but that's not what we're talking about. All right, so the fact that you guys are hungover is perfect for this case because it's super complicated.
Oh, trust me, it's going to be that way for every single episode.
Yeah, I'm going to need you guys, little dum-dums, to try and follow.
Okay.
Okay. Don't interrupt me. You're not allowed to talk. You're just going to sit there. You're eye candy only. Okay. Just kidding. I'm going to need you to interrupt me because, guys, I'm not like really a host, right? I just like murder and crime. You know what I mean? Well, and I just want to find a way.
You're a white female in America. Of course you like true crime.
Of course I do. Which I think we should kind of say because, I mean, we're not doing anything revolutionary here, right? But we're doing it, you know, it's our show.
Mm-hmm.
We're one of a million
crime. Okay, when you first started off with that, I thought you were going in a different direction where you're going to like put out some sort of podcast segregation. I just want to say, by the way, this podcast, white women only.
White women only.
Nobody else can listen to the show.
I don't want anyone to listen who's from Canada, if you know what I mean. No.
Famously ethnic country.
Famously. And that's my only expertise, and I think all of us, our only expertise is that we, you know, like crime.
And can talk.
And can talk and read.
Well, sort of can talk.
And yeah. Sort of can
I
read.
I can't talk. Or yeah. Read. Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about Timothy Hennis and the Eastburn murders. I'm intrigued with this case. We're going to do a little teaser. I'm intrigued with this case because he is the only person to be tried three times for his life. Ever.
What?
Idiot. The fuck?
Couldn't get it right.
Yeah, I
know. Couldn't get it right the first time.
Couldn't get it right the first time. You know,
Triple Jeopardy.
That's so
I'm a sequel to Double Jeopardy.
Yeah. So I'm mulling over a couple titles. Either it's Triple Jeopardy.
I think Triple Jeopardy is really
I like bad. It too. Three Times the Charm, The Three Trials of Timothy Hennis, or the Cursed Members Only Jacket. Because I think in this story, you guys are going to see a common theme with a members only jacket.
Oh, which, yeah. That anybody that wears one is a murderer.
But in the 80s, like, didn't everybody wear them?
Everybody was a serial killer in the 80s. Have you read through the history of serial killers? As soon as members-only jackets went out of style, the number of serial killers plummeted.
Yeah, and you're going to actually, this case kind of gets into that, where there wasn't DNA testing at the time. So, like, it was in its infancy. It wasn't exact, so people weren't using it. So in the 80s, if you were just like, I didn't do it, and you had a pretty sweet alibi, you were off. Do you know what I mean?
Or if you just had an idiot testifying on your behalf, like whether or not they were on your side, that just somebody was like, oh, yeah, I saw everything happen.
Yeah. They went on, like, witness testimony all the time, which they kind of did in this. So in 1985, the Eastburn family lived at 367 Summer Hill Road, just off base near Fort Bragg in Fayetteville, one of the most patriotic cities in the nation, the biggest military base. Gary Eastburn, an Air Force captain, was away at Squadron Officers School in Alabama, and his family planned on moving to England later that year, and their English setter, their dog Dixie, could not make the move. Okay?
But it's an English setter. Isn't that just like taking it home?
Yeah.
Were they not going to let it back in the country? Its passport wasn't in order?
Yeah. The dog was like, what the fuck, dude? There's a couple things with the dog in the beginning where I'm like, come on.
It's a dog.
Yeah, but you can't. I mean, do you really want to, like, take it in the airplane and, you know, moving with three children, right, all the way across country? You're probably, if you're going to leave something behind, I would leave the baby. But but they, I guess, wanted to leave the dog.
I was going to say, it's much harder to travel with children than it is for... You can't put a child in the luggage bay.
Yeah, if you're going to choose which one to, like,
you can't
leave.
Check a child like it's a suitcase.
Yeah, exactly.
Crate the dog, put it under the plane, ship it out.
Well, what I'm getting at is you should be able to do that with a baby.
Yeah, yeah.
But people are just so up in arms about taking care of kids for some goddamn reason. They're surprisingly resilient. I'm sure that you can.
Oh, yeah. The baby would be fine. So anyways.
The baby will be already, just fine.
Already. I mean, I have so many pages. So many pages.
Okay.
Just
joking.
What she's trying to say is shut the fuck up.
Katie Eastburn, his wife, was home alone because he was away in Alabama. She was home alone with her three young daughters, so she thought that would maybe be a sweet time to put an ad in the paper for someone to come, inviting strangers in. I don't want to victim blame, and I'm not victim blaming, but I'm just saying, like, it was the 80s, right? We trusted a little bit more. But anyways, she thought that would be a good time to put an ad in the paper for someone to come and rehome Dixie. So on May 7th, Timothy Hennis, a 27-year-old Army sergeant who lived across town with his new wife and young daughter, answered the ad. Tim is 6'6", by the way. Ooh. I'm gonna be saying a couple little things in here that are going to sound like, why is she, you know, over-explaining, but they're all going to kind of come back later.
Okay.
He was a beefcake, is what you're saying.
By the way,
total
he was...
Total fucking beefcake.
Unfortunately, and I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it right now, he was my type.
He was a good-looking guy.
He was a good-looking guy. He was a mustachioed, blonde, 6'6", little bit of meat on the bones, you can something to grab onto when you're falling off the bed.
So he's a hunk.
He was kind of a hunk, right?
But 6'6" is on the line of
comfy to fall asleep on.
Yeah, that
too
can,
tall. No,
yeah.
If you get above 6'6", you start getting into like gigantism territory, and that's when you start looking like Richard Keel from.
But he
from
looked totally normal. He was like, he didn't have that Cro-Magnon thing. You know what I mean?
Like if anybody's watching the video,
yeah, like Coop.
Exactly what I'm pointing out right here.
Yeah, that fucking brick on your forehead.
But Coop is like, you know, he's prehistoric. He's a man.
I'm also only 6'3", so I'm below like the weird level of.
Yeah, yeah. You're most women's ideal. Mine 6'6". He could have been a little fatter, but whatever. It's blonde mustachio. So Katie, a petite pretty brunette, greeted Tim and invited him inside. Sure. Come on in, 6'6". You know what I mean? I'm here. She told him, I just put my kids to bed. She did. Come on in. Come on in.
My husband's out of town.
My husband's out of town. He's going to be gone for a long time.
I've never heard of Ed Kemper before, so I'm not afraid of giants.
Nope, I don't know any of the neighbors. Nobody's going to be checking on me. So they chatted and played with the dog briefly, and then Tim ultimately left with Dixie and drove off in his white Chevette. Keep that in the old noggin for later. So 4 days later...
Handsome guy, nice car.
Nice guy. I know.
I like him already.
A little Chevette.
Was he in uniform at the time?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. That would have been enough. That
would have put me over the edge right there.
You would have raped him. not that I'm not saying I'm not giving anything away. I'm not spoiling anything, but... Coop would have turned it right around on him. So 4 days later, Gary Eastburn tried calling his wife, but there was no answer. The next day, on Mother's Day, May 11th, gosh, so many, was this where you were like, fuck. I know.
Once I started looking into it, as soon as it got into the details of the murder, like every, it didn't help that I was hungover when I was, when I was going through all this. Last part of it, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is the first episode we're gonna do.
I know, I'm sorry. And I was like, I wanted to do another one, the Stephen Stainer and his brother. But I was I don't want to do stuff with kids. All right. Turns out, most fucking people that kill or do fucked up shit,
it involves
there's
children.
Kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to find just like a adult on adult crime.
Well,
very
because
hard.
If you look at the history of Canada, especially if you just murder some random adult out in the middle of nowhere, primarily indigenous people,
nobody's
going to give a shit. Your name's not going to be remembered anywhere.
It's very true.
You got to go for the kids. You got to go over the top.
Coop.
You thought about this too much.
Go for the gold. Okay. So on Mother's Day, May 11th, the Eastburn's neighbor noticed newspapers piling up on the driveway. And when he heard a baby crying inside, called the police. Okay, I'm not going to get super gruesome, but here we go. When the police arrived, they cut open a screen in the baby's room and handed the severely malnourished 22-month-old Jana to the neighbor along with some diapers and a bottle. The officer recalled the unmistakable odor of death, which they talk about a lot. I hope that I never have to smell that. But like when people that have smelled it talk about it, it's
very recognizable.
Yeah. And like you know it immediately, even if you've never smelled it before. You know what I'm saying? So again, I don't want to ever.
You haven't smelled
it. You're all right, bud?
Yep. Good.
Good. Good over there? I'm telling you, next time, bring the bottle in.
Yeah.
So you could be blackout by the time we do the show.
What happened? Come on.
No, it is.
I know.
No, it is good.
No,
that,
I know. I'm
that
sorry.
We're not getting into the
we're not
going to
totally get into the details. I'm just going to tell you. So
it's bad. It's real bad.
Joel,
I'll tell you after.
Did
the
you
show.
Go pee-pee?
I went pee-pee.
I mean, I'm going to tell you kind of what happened, but we're not going to like go super into it because we need to know like what he did. But anyways, when the officer recalled the unmistakable odor, and when he saw a dead body at the end of the hallway, he radioed for the homicide unit. Now, a little bit of levity here, but detectives, like partner detectives, always have like the best names together.
Oh.
These officers, Rob Biddles and Jack Watts. So Biddles and Watts.
Biddles and Watts, dude. I mean, on the scene.
Maybe we can name it that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Biddles and Watts.
Yeah, and they walk in and just, like, smell it and fucking paint. But Biddles and Watts are on the case.
Kick open the front door, walk in, and both start puking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're like...
Biddles always passes out when he sees a dead body.
Okay, this is so bad. But, yeah, Biddles. And then Watts is always the one that's like, come on, Biddles, right?
Yeah, he's more...
Get it together, man.
Watts is the one that wakes up every morning and, like, mixes half a bottle of Pepto-Bismol with Jack Daniels, chugs it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm ready to do really, my job. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He can just handle it. So...
Biddles and Watts are on the scene.
Yeah, so maybe... I mean, I was kind of throwing, like, as far as, like, a title, something about that, you know what I mean? The Adventures of Biddles and Watts.
What's the matter, Biddles? You never seen a bunch of murdered children before?
So they first found 5-year-old Kara under her Star Wars blanket, stabbed repeatedly in the chest with her throat slit. Yep. Then they found 3-year-old Aaron bludgeoned and nearly decapitated. On the other side lay Katie, naked from the waist down, stabbed 15 times. Her throat was also slit and she had been raped. An aluminol test revealed a bloody crime scene, and the killer attempted to clean up the scene. Okay, done. That's it. That's all we're going to talk about as far as, like, that.
So I was...
I just needed to know, because I think the brutalness of the crime did not match someone doing this just one time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's something that I was curious about. And also, I couldn't figure out why... So the detective said that they were confused about the little amount of blood on the crime scene, considering its brutality, and that's when they did the luminol tests, and they figured out that somebody had tried to clean it up.
Yes.
What? I don't understand.
Why clean it if you leave the bodies there?
Yeah, that it really didn't prevent anybody from finding out that there was a murder.
Yeah.
The bodies weren't hidden. Did the killer just go like, oh, wait, shit, this is way too much work. I tried to do it,
but then was like, fuck, right? Or tried to do it, was taking stuff out to the, you know, like bags out to the car or something, and someone saw him.
You got spooked,
and
so
then
split.
He just split. I don't know, but...
That's interesting, yeah.
When you first hear this, you think this is like... overkill, which is usually someone that knows them.
A crime of passion.
Right. So, like, this is not just someone like, oh, I need some money, or it's a break-in gone wrong or something, because you wouldn't just stab people that many times, like, try and, like, actually cut off heads. Like, you...
So how many people are dead, two?
Three.
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 And then the baby... And then the baby was left alive, but was there for, like, 4 days... Totally malnourished. They said
hours
was
away
like,
from death, from what I heard. If they hadn't found the child at that point, the little girl, then she would have...
just, like, died of starvation.
Yeah.
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 Just crying in her...
Yeah. Horrible.
That's also something else that I thought was kind of curious is...
Why leave the baby there?
Why leave the baby? Because the baby was old enough... She was, what, just under 2 years old?
Yeah, so she was 22 months, so she would have been able to talk a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, you think that he's getting rid of everybody that can identify him.
Yeah.
And then maybe he didn't, I don't know, maybe he didn't see her or whatever, but for some reason she was left alive. Hmm. So Gary Eastburn was flown back from Alabama, and they didn't even really tell him what happened because they couldn't. So he sort of knew that someone was dead, and he kept asking, like, how many?
Yeah, when the police called, he had tried to contact his family before and hadn't gotten an answer. So once he got a phone call from the police, he knew something was wrong. And his first question was, how many of them are dead?
Yeah.
Which that is a...
It's a weird question, right?
It's a very weird question, and also a horrifying question to ask, where it's like, all right, how many got killed?
Yeah, because I have so many. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. it was weird, and they sort of looked into that a little bit. But once they questioned him, I mean, first of all, his alibi is airtight. But he ended, I mean, he was never really a suspect. If he was in town, no matter where he was, if he wasn't on like military orders where they could actually show where he was, I think he would have been convicted for this, right?
Just oh, because absolutely.
I don't know if they could look past him doing it. But anyways, he was questioned and pressed for leads, and he told police that a man came and took their dog, but he didn't know anything about him. So noticing the crime scene, so didn't know anything about him. So that's all he kind of knew, but that's what he gave to police, is like his wife had told him that somebody took the dog. So Timothy Hennis being there was one thing, and she told her husband about it, but she was still alone for 4 days after that. So I guess we're assuming that maybe he came back. But anyways, so noticing the crime, the police.
One of their heads was almost chopped off.
I think two of them, yeah. I'll tell you the
gory details after the show.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to know those details, they can look them up on their own. But we're trying to make jokes about things, and if we get into the bad details, then people are going
to
know that
we're not
going
to be able to banter and have some fun slaps and tickles. But anyways, noticing the crime scene at the East Burns house, Patrick Cohn, a neighbor, sought out police to tell them that shortly after 3 a.m. on Friday morning, he saw a tall white male wearing jeans, a knit cap, and a members-only jacket. This is the first time that our main character is
the
is
real main character of the story.
The members-only jacket.
The black members-only jacket.
Black members-only jacket. So he was wearing a knit cap and a members-only jacket, and left the East Burns home with a trash bag slung over his shoulder. And he said, I guess as Cohn was passing, the male said to him, getting an early start this morning. And then he got in his white Chevette and drove away. According to Cohn, Cohn worked with
white Chevette, which was also driven by Hennis.
Yes. So basically he's straight up describing Hennis. I mean, yeah. Tall, white male, knit cap, members only, Chevette. 3 a.m. on Friday. That would make sense because they were killed on Thursday. Anyway, so Cohn worked with the detectives. Who? Biddles and Watts.
Worked with the detectives to create a composite
sketch. Meantime, detectives were walking Gary through the home to see what items were missing. So what was missing from the house was an envelope of cash and then Katie's ATM card, along with a piece of paper with the PIN number on it.
Wasn't there also a metal lockbox that went missing, or was that what the envelope of cash was in?
No, so they said a lockbox. They didn't know what was in that, but the lockbox was missing. I think the cash was in there.
Oh, okay, that would make sense.
Yeah.
So he asked her for the pin and wrote it down?
No, I think, well, maybe.
Well, he was...
Everyone was thinking that she just, like, had it kind of written down in her wallet.
She'd probably have that memorized.
Yes, but then why would the husband know that it was there? Because he had to go through and say everything that was missing.
Yeah.
So he pointed out that the card was missing along with the piece of paper that she kept. And I'm sure he had this conversation of fight with her all the time. Which was don't keep the fucking piece of paper in the wallet.
Just remember the goddamn number.
It's
four fucking numbers. You can remember every single time I leave the toilet seat up, but you can't remember these four fucking numbers.
Exactly. So.
And that's why he killed her.
That was missing, and that's why the husband did it. The husband always does it, but I mean, I don't know in this case. So Tim Hennis was watching TV on Wednesday with his wife when he saw that he was a suspect in Katie's murder. So he drove with his wife and his child to the sheriff's office and just turned himself in for questioning. But He was pretty, they noticed that he was pretty arrogant and kind of a dick, although that does not make you a murderer, right?
Yeah.
If I was 6'6", handsome, driving a Chevette, had a members only jacket,
yeah,
it's the 80s,
right?
I would have been fucking arrogant too.
I would have been a dick. And also, you're bothering me with this shit. You know what I mean? I've got stuff to do.
You think I need to kill a lady to have sex with her?
I know.
Look at
me. Have you seen me? I'm freaking everybody's type.
That's what they call the
Errol Flynn defense. He basically was saying shit like that, though. Apparently. Just like, you better know what you're doing, guys. Like, but anyways, and he also, besides being a little bit, you know, arrogant and kind of a dick, he was really cooperative and gave up every bit of his fluids. Like, had no problem giving, like, blood samples, fingerprint.
Semen.
Yeah, jacked off on him.
The crazy thing is, they couldn't even test semen for DNA back then.
Right.
He just jerked off on the detective's desk anyway.
Yeah, because he was, like, trying to... He said, test this.
Test this what?
Yeah, yeah.
Try and stop me.
It's the 80s, right? Gosh, we're really making him sound... horrible.
He sounds like an asshole.
Yeah, but I mean, depending on where you
speak
land,
for yourself.
Depending on where you land on this case, I mean, maybe he was a big dick, and we can be making fun of him.
I really want to hear what your take on this is, because I don't know if I have the same take as you, but I haven't done as much research about this as you have.
We might have the same take.
Okay.
Okay. Because it sounds like no. So yeah, he gave up all of his fluids, which again. If he had consulted with me first, we all know, get you a lawyer. Don't even go in for questioning. I mean, but again, it's the 80s. Nobody's listening to true crime podcasts and learning that, like, they have so many more rights than
they
think. Yeah.
Yeah, but sorry. Just the first...
Just all of his fluids?
First image that popped in my mind when you said he gave up all of his fluids. Just kind of like... explodes from every orifice.
Oh, we did a number 7 right in front of him, right? We like to bring that back.
Yeah. Number 7.
We just did a number 7 right in front of him.
All
right,
we need saliva, blood, semen. Oh, you want a number 7, all right.
Yep.
Vomit, poo-poo.
Oh, yeah.
So crying.
Pee-pee, poo-poo, tears, blood, semen, vomit. Snot, vomit.
Earwax.
Is there another one?
Women
can do
titty milk.
Yeah, women can do.
Well, that's getting into milk. Milwaukee milkshake territory.
Yes, exactly. This is not why we're here, guys.
Only if a child's involved.
I promised I wasn't going to talk about prolapse, and you guys fucking got me on it already. Or maybe the name of the show should be "Don't Say Prolapse." It's a game we like to play, and I always lose.
Don't Say Prolapse with Jesse Weissman.
Don't Jesse Weissman. I promise you can't do it. He was questioned for 7 hours, and he ultimately said he picked up the dog on Tuesday, and besides a call on Thursday to see how the dog was, he had not seen her since. He didn't even know that she was murdered until he saw on the TVs.
Until he saw the body in the house after he murdered her.
Yeah. I didn't even
know she
was
dead.
Dead until I went back to the scene to try and clean it up. And are you okay, Joel?
I'm good.
We're done with that. We're not going to talk about what exactly happened.
Oh no, I'm going to give you all the nitty gritty details when I'm driving
sure
you home
will.
Tonight.
Yeah. He's just going to puke in your car.
Did he go back? You think he left and came back? Got some more action.
So that's what they're going to.
Well, he's not a Ted
say.
Bundy type, I don't think. Like, I don't think he went back to the crime scene to.
No,
to reassault the corpse.
No, but what Joel is saying is exactly what they're saying, which is he got the dog. He saw that there's a woman there alone.
Yeah.
And that she's going to be alone for a long time. He could come back. Do you know what I mean? So he kind of like. Thought about it.
Yeah, he had time to think and was like, all right.
That's what they're saying. But anyways, after showing Patrick Cohn, the first witness, the first and only witness, really, a photo lineup and a vehicle line up, essentially like picking out what the vehicle was. He positively identified Hennis and his white Chevette.
Hey,
and
bro, later, which one of these cars is the most badass?
Yeah, exactly. Which one did you see? Later that evening / morning at 1 a.m., police descended on Hennis's home and arrested him on 3 counts of murder, 1 count of rape. And he is loosely quoted as saying, "I only heard it one place." He said, "I hope you guys know what you're doing. And I guess I get to wear one of those orange jumpsuits now." Now, listen.
Damn.
Did he say that? I don't know. Did the detective just hate him anyways and like say that he said things? I don't know. That's just dumb. It's not even funny.
Yeah. And that's also one of the issues with a lot of police investigations is they're looking for a culprit. They're looking for somebody to pin a crime on to. I'm not saying that, you know, all cops are dirty or all investigations are dirty, but the incentive is to close the case.
Yes.
So if you can find somebody that has enough reasonable evidence pointing towards them as being the culprit.
Yeah.
It's kind of human nature to, it's a bias. It's a logical fallacy where you're going to kind of add some extra things to it to, yeah, even subconsciously to make it that much more likely that,
like, think about just making like a documentary. If somebody wants to make somebody look guilty in a documentary, for example, they just pick and choose the different types of evidence, the, you know, eyewitness testimony, whatever it may be, to make it point in that direction. If you look at all of the evidence, you kind of be like, oh, well, there's reasonable doubt, right?
Yeah, it's a...
But a lot of times, and probably definitely in the 80s, the detectives had someone they thought it was, and they did whatever they could, you know, as far as, like, maybe when they show the lineup, they kind of, like, push one closer.
Yeah.
Or make it, like, the first photo, whatever they need to do to be like, hey, this is the guy you saw, right? Because that's the person that they think... That's the person that they...
It's the one they want to get.
Yeah, and they've already decided, and anything else that kind of comes up for reasonable doubt, they can deal with in court, basically.
And it also falls under... It's really two different logical fallacies, where it's the confirmation bias and the sunken cost fallacy, where they're putting effort into proving that this one particular person is the culprit.
Killer.
So the more time that they put into that, the more important it is for them to confirm that this person is indeed guilty.
Right.
Yeah.
And
they'll
little
even believe
thing.
It themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't even know if every time it's there's malice or anything like that, or they're doing like a dirty cops or anything. I think it's just when you see a crime scene like that with kids dead, you have someone that it probably is. You're like,
you're going to hate him already.
Yeah. And you're just going to be like, fucking this guy did this, and
this
I'm going to, even if I have to plant evidence, I'm going to make sure that he, right?
I know it's him, so I'm going to make sure that he gets convicted. And that,
like OJ,
that could
poor
even,
OJ. Do you know what I mean?
He got railroaded.
Yes. What's his name?
Stephen Avery.
Yeah.
That motherfucker did it, though.
He did it for sure, and I think they knew.
Yeah.
But they were like, we can't really prove it, so let's plant some shit to make sure he gets it.
Exactly, but make sure you don't get caught when you're doing that. Make sure you're sure and that you don't get caught, because then the case gets thrown out and motherfuckers are walking.
Yeah, and then also
they fucked up. They would have got him if they didn't plant shit.
Yep. You look at the way that they made the documentary. When you watch the documentary, you are positive that this guy is innocent, because that's what the documentary makers wanted people to think.
Exactly.
So it's the whole confirmation bias.
Right.
Exactly. So now he goes, we are heading into trial. So let's talk about the things that they have against him. So his alibi is that he took his wife and daughter to her mother's house on the 9th to drop them off for Mother's Day. I don't like it.
A couple days early,
and why aren't you going, right?
And who the fuck wants to spend 2 days with their mom for Mother's Day?
Seriously.
You just need to do brunch, and then it's over and done with.
Yeah, or like you guys all go together for the weekend. I'm not sure why. He meets Katie on the 7th, right? Gets the dog.
Okay.
On the 9th, he then drives his whole family away and then comes back. Interesting. Then possibly that night goes over to Katie's. Just saying. That's what they're saying, that basically he has no alibi because he dropped off everyone that could corroborate and he's by himself.
There was something else that I heard he did that night also.
Was it burning the stuff?
It was going to see an ex.
Oh, yes. So this one I haven't read everywhere, but, and it kind of comes up, but he had gone to see an ex-girlfriend and after he had dropped off. So it would be the night of the murder, but earlier. And she was like, how's your marriage going? And he's like, she left me. Basically saying, like, I'm not lying because she, like, left.
Technically.
To her mom's, right? I know. And I guess the nothing rest happened. Is all she semantics. Said.
We're just splitting hairs.
Yeah, yeah. She said nothing happened, but, like, it seemed like he was kind of trying and saying that they had problems.
So he's a douche.
Yeah.
If the stuff is true.
Well,
this guy seems like a douche.
He seems like a douche. He seems like the most unlucky guy ever, as far as.
Bro, he's 6'6. He drives a sick ass car.
He's got testosterone. He's got a members only
jacket.
You know what I mean?
Mustache. No, wife's away. This guy's not a douche. He fucks.
Yeah, this guy is
his exes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This train is right on time. You know what I'm saying?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
But that, you know, according to her, which I don't know if they really go into it in court, but it is definitely something that they talk about. His neighbors, I think it was
something that the prosecution tried to use.
Yes.
Is that he got shot down in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, yeah, well, where else can I go?
Yeah.
Oh, the woman that's alone, whose husband is out of town.
So she was like, fuck off. And he was like, fine.
All right. I know some people. Exactly. I know somebody little fucking was kind of flirting with me, right? Then she shoots him down. It's like, what the fuck, bro? Like, you got the dog, let's go. And then possibly. Now this is, we're all just, this is the prosecution's case. We don't know. We weren't there. But the neighbors also recall him burning stuff in his backyard. So burning some items, which is not something that he normally did. It's not like, oh, they always had this like burn pit and kind of burn leaves or whatever. Like my fucking asshole neighbor at my old house that would just burn fucking wet leaves every weekend like he lives in the country. We're not in the country. Yeah. You know.
You sure it was just wet leaves?
Exactly. But that
smelled like barbecue every time, which was weird.
It was so smoky. It would like come into my house. I could like it was on my clothes.
Just, that sucks.
Yeah.
Couldn't even smell the cigarettes you were smoking.
Exactly. It's one of these things where it's like, dude, you live in a nice neighborhood, okay? You're not fucking white trash in the country. And by the way, go ahead. If you have 20 acres, burn your shit. I don't care. If you're right at my fence, we're going to have problems. Yeah. And by problems, I mean I just talk shit behind his back and didn't say anything to him. But we're going to have those kind of problems, guys, where I just don't do anything about it.
Door slam. That
and
he can
you
hear.
Will never know if I'm mad. That's
never
fun,
RSVP
right?
to parties.
Yeah, yeah.
Take that, you son of a
that
bitch.
That party that we had for the kids with all the fucking jumpy houses and everything?
Yeah.
No invite, bro. Turn the music up. No, fuck him. That's the kind of thing I'll do, little things like that. And that you being won't said, know why.
The kids showed up and they were still invited in and
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I ended up going to the fence and being like, hey, buddy, you want to come over? But like, fuck him. You know what I mean? And he will know the wrath of like me being a little bit mad for a second and not telling him about it. But anyways, and then also Friday morning after the murders, Hennis took in a single piece of clothing to be dry cleaned. What was it?
Black members only jacket.
Boom.
Because it had blood on it.
Yeah. Why else, by the way? Why else? It's not like you're taking, it's like taking a hoodie in. Here you go, sir. Like just one hoodie and being like, can you dry clean this? They're like, can you? You probably wash it, right? So it was a little bit weird.
You know, it's probably easier to just burn it. We know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's blood on it,
we get
right?
these multiple times a week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anytime a members only jacket comes in, there's fucking blood on it. Yeah. They also had the eyewitness testimony of Cone. And Hennis was actually behind on his rent. His rent was $300. That's the amount. $300. And he was magically able to pay it. And then also a woman that the police tracked down. And I say tracked down because it's one of those things where they wanted someone to corroborate it. So they found a woman that used the ATM a little bit after Katie's card was used. And she first said, I don't remember anyone standing there. And then after the detectives kind of questioned her more, then she remembered seeing a tall, blonde-haired man standing at the ATM.
After the detectives just slid a $5 bill across the table.
She first said, I don't remember anything. I just went to the ATM. It's like, there might have been someone in front of me. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Abraham Lincoln here says you that remember? You saw a six. Oh, and let me introduce you to his other friend, Mr. George Washington.
It's a coin.
$6. I saw him.
Maybe I did see your guy. Yep. Knit cap, members only. They're like, no. Just say blonde hair. Don't go too far. Right? Just say blonde haired guy.
It believable.
Like, okay.
It's covered in blood.
Yeah. Because,
right?
He was covered in blood. He was carrying bodies? Three bodies? No. just kind of give a little. Okay. Oh, and then as well as the visit to the girlfriend, that's also what they had. So the prosecution showed this huge slideshow of crime scene photos of the kids and the wife, also autopsy photos. And after they did this thing where like made it really big on the wall for the jury. After every time they a slide was shown, they were like, this guy, baby killer. Like they really played on the juries. Like us right now. If we saw this guy sitting here and those pictures and somebody told us that he did it, we would be like, yes.
That would very much affect your decision.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to pay. If you're saying it's him, let's just fucking go with it, right?
Like the wine bottle image from the Amber Heard trial, Johnny Depp trial. You see that wine bottle on the ground, you're like, he fucking did it.
That piece of shit.
Yeah. Motherfucker. Yeah.
That or, the poop. I thought the poop.
Yeah, the poop is...
It was more the poop.
The poop is what swayed me the most.
Yeah, I think it was more the poop.
Amber, no poopy.
Amber, no. So the jury took only 10 hours to convict Hennis on 3 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of rape. Damn. He was ultimately sentenced to death. Joel, do you think this is over? Uh-uh, bud. You got a long road ahead of you. No more murder stuff.
I got another seltzer right here.
So he's in jail. You think, okay, we got the guy. Let's move on with our lives. So in 1988... Hennis obviously is trying to appeal because he's, to this day, actually, he's saying that he was completely innocent.
He's still alive, this guy?
Yeah. Buckle up. In 1988.
This story concludes surprisingly recently.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, wait, we just opened some cans, so we should cheers.
Oh, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to our sponsor. To murders.
Crime Corner, Episode 1.
Episode 1.
Sponsored by Hard AF Seltzer.
Yes.
It's all downhill from here.
Okay, so in 1988, Hennis was granted an appeal based on those graphic... they had a bunch of different things that they could say, But basically, they got the appeal because they're saying the prosecution went way too far and swayed the jury with the huge pictures of dead kids and pointing to him. So they granted him a new trial. Mm-hmm. So there was also, so in the new trial, they were able to, they used the discrepancies such as the fingerprints and hair. So there was hair at the scene, fingerprints, and one pubic hair that they found. None of those matched Hennis. So, like, that's usually what you would use, right? Mm-hmm.
So, you're redhead? Oh, he's a blonde.
He's a blonde.
So, you might have a red bush.
But the pubic hair was red.
Yeah.
But I think were they able to test the hair then? I don't know.
I don't think they were able to do any sort of.
They made him pull
DNA
his dick
testing.
Out in court and they just held and that just pubic hair next to his.
Yeah. Nope. Different color. Yeah. There was also footprints outside that were two sizes smaller than Hennis. So all these things that they didn't say in the first trial, that nothing fit. Really nothing really matched. There was no, there was also, well, I'm going to go into the letter later cause that was weird. But,
From Mr. X,
which is just like, I don't know who wrote that, but it wasn't,
think that it was just bullshit. It was just somebody.
It might have been the lawyers, to be honest with you. Like, well, somebody trying to help him out.
Either that or even just like the
weirdos.
The equivalent of an internet troll.
Exactly. Back in the day, which means you need to mail letters to multiple people. And it's the same as trolling
someone.
That
is some fucking dedication, though.
Seriously. And you don't get to, like, see the look on their faces or, like, get a response or anything. You just literally are sending it out and being like, yeah.
Fucking got him.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's going to get there, but in my mind, I got him.
Fuck that family.
Wait,
they're
so
not
what
getting
is it?
Any closure.
What is the Mr. X thing?
Oh, I'll go in one second. So I'm going to go through all the things that they used in the appeal to actually defend him this time, which it doesn't seem in the last trial they really were using these things to defend him. Basically, they didn't say in the first trial that nothing matched. Like, you need actual evidence to send someone to death, right? Like, you have to be real fucking sure. And none of the actual physical evidence matched. Also, the dry cleaners did not use any special chemicals on the jacket, and there was no trace of blood. So if there was blood on the jacket, even if you dry cleaned it, you would be able to see some kind of trace. And there wasn't.
Luminol would still make that show up, wouldn't it? Because Luminol can pick up traces of blood.
Yeah.
In
but they're saying there is like a special chemical that you can ask them to use, which like...
Who's going to go in and be like, hey, that stuff you got that really gets rid of the blood?
You know, do you have any chemicals for like, I don't know, oil or blood? Yeah, like... No. So he just got it dry cleaned normally, and there still would be blood. And then when they tested the jacket, there was no blood. So there's nothing that could have gotten it out. Was he wearing it during the... Whatever. Basically, you're just discrediting everything they used in the first trial. Mm.
He goes and gets his jacket dry cleaned, suddenly has $300 to to pay his landlord.
Yeah. And the max...
He went out and pulled
out
some tricks.
Yeah.
He was cleaning semen off of his jacket.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which shows up.
You're saying he's a hooker.
For at least one night.
Mm.
You do what you got to do to pay your bills.
Oh, what I didn't say is when whoever used Katie's ATM card took out the maximum amount, and the maximum amount you could take out is $300. And then he was magically able to pay. So, like, look, is he super unlucky? I don't know. Did he do it? I don't know.
The ATM didn't have a camera back then?
I think what really happened is he sucked off the killer. He sucked off the real killer and then had to clean the semen off the jacket.
Oh.
Mm.
Anyways.
I like your sexual perspective.
Like, for everything.
this is my fan fiction that I'm
this
working on.
This is my sex show.
6'6", semen.
Mm. Yeah. You know what I think? He was sucking dudes off. All right, Coop. Anyway...
in my mind.
In your mind. At the trial, they also discredited Cone, the one eyewitness testimony, using his run-ins with the law and alcohol issues, basically just saying he wasn't a credible witness. He also said that night was like clear, nice evening. they went back in the records and saw that it was actually very overcast and would be hard to see.
Yeah, they got like an actual meteorologist to testify about that.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to get this guy off.
Didn't they make some sort of point about the amount of time that the witness that testified seeing him at the ATM, didn't they actually make the jury sit there and wait for that same amount of time?
Yes. So the woman that identified Hennis at the ATM said at first, like I said, she didn't remember anything. Then they finally got her to say that she saw a tall blonde haired guy, but she didn't use the ATM until 3.5 minutes after Katie's card was used. And when you hear that, you go, oh, it's not that long. But in the trial, they made everybody sit in silence for 3.5 minutes. And when you do that, you're kind of like, oh, shit, this is a kind of long time, right? Yeah. Like, it's not like...
He could have been long gone before she even pulled up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was a good one. And then, like you said, there was an anonymous letter, basically just a troll, I think, but an anonymous letter sent to both Hennis and the sheriff's department that said, Dear Mr. Hennis, it's very on the nose too. Dear Mr. Hennis, I did the crime. I murdered the Eastburns. Sorry you're doing the time. I'll be safely out of North Carolina by the time you read this. Thanks, Mr. X. Like...
That seems so fucking...
That's a troll.
Yeah.
That's not a well, also, triple
it's
murder.
In Butter's handwriting or whatever his name is. Yeah. Butter's Watts.
Yeah, yeah. It's Biddles. Yeah, he's like... Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or it's the
Biddles
the lawyer.
Is crossed out
yeah,
and yeah. says Mr. X.
Yeah. Whoops.
Sincerely,
says whoops.
Detective yeah. Bit. Oh, yeah, cross yeah. that out.
Exactly.
Mr.
It's something
X.
like that. They did say, like, they never found out who wrote that letter, and they did say it was either just someone that was... you know, following the crime or whatever and was fucking weird.
It seems way too convenient that it was sent both to Hennis and the police.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it could have been anyone. I mean, I would probably, if I could, I would probably be like, call my wife and be like, look, send a fucking weird ass letter. You're going to try anything. So I don't know. But they never found out who wrote the letter, which is also weird. So finally, their big moment at the end of the trial was their witness, John Rapinoe. So he was a teenager in the neighborhood by the Eastburns' house, and he had trouble sleeping, so he would run in the neighborhood early morning or at night or whatever. And he usually wore a what?
Members-only jacket.
Members-only jacket and a knit cap.
Mm-hmm.
So they were saying that Cone could have actually saw him. He might have been fucking drunk. We know Cone. Cone likes to party, dude. So, and he gets in trouble for it. So, you know, Cone could have been walking in a stupor.
Hammered,
smoking real sticks at 3 a.m. And was like... Yeah, and was like, oh, I saw some guy in a knit cap, whatever. So basically that's what they turned his testimony into. And in the trial, they did this big reveal moment, which I didn't know you could actually do. Like, you have to, like, let people know when you're doing this. But they had this guy, John Rapinoe, walk in through the back doors of the courtroom to be, like, a witness. And he's, like, looks exactly like Tim Hennis. And everyone's like, oh, fuck.
Oh.
And that was, like, their big moment,
and the
right?
defense is like, oh, my God, there's the killer. Just kidding.
And so it's kind of – it was a moment where everyone, including, you know, prosecution, was like, oh, shit. Like, that's it. So after 2 days of deliberation, they found Hennis not guilty on all counts.
Whoa.
You think it's over, bro? Uh-uh. I know you want to go home.
Okay. No, I like this.
I know you want to go home, brother. I know you want me to say, well, and they lived happily ever after. He got off. He was an innocent man. Not going to happen, okay? Buckle up. Get a drink.
Drinking.
I'm tired of your bullshit, dude. Okay, so after his acquittal, Hennis reenlisted in the Army.
Wait, and this acquittal, what year was that?
88. 89.
So he got out.
89.
He's out.
So we got out in 89, convicted in 85, 86, served. They were trying to work on an appeal for 3 years, essentially, and he got out in 88, late 88.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And so after his acquittal, Hennis reenlisted in the army and was promoted to staff sergeant. He served in Iraq during Desert Storm. And again, in Somalia, he received many awards and accolades and was, like, exemplary in everything he did, basically, from that point.
Did he keep his family?
Kept his family, mm-hmm. had another kid, was leader of his son's Boy Scout troop. Everyone.
Great guy.
Everyone was, like, there was no incidents or anything after he was, like, you know, top of the line everywhere. And he retired. He ultimately retired from the army in 2004 with a rank of master sergeant. So he was like fucking awesome.
He crushed it.
He crushed it. You were okay. Like, okay, like this innocent guy was in, you know, on death row for 3 years. And, you know, we got the wrong guy.
Got the wrong guy.
He's a great guy. 6'6", a little bit of a dick, but he turned it around. Right? Gary... Eastburn, after losing his wife and two daughters, he relocated to London with his surviving daughter and married an English nurse. And after he retired, he settled in Washington. So everyone seems to be doing good and living life.
Everything's great.
Everything's great. So then in 2005, Captain Larry Trotter...
The coincidence of where he decided to move is fucking mind-blowing.
Right? They don't even really go into that much, but they both settled in Washington. Weird, right?
Roughly like 30 minutes from each other.
Mm-hmm. Really? And by the way, I think it's important to note that Gary Eastburn, even after when Hennis was acquitted, he was like, I think he did it. Like, I just don't, you know, I know we need to be looking for someone else, but I just feel like he did this. So he's, you know, trying to get over that for, 20 years? Anyway, 2005, Captain Larry Trotter, he's not a character in the story yet, so don't act like you needed to remember. Not that you would have anyways.
Don't get too attached
to him yet.
Our
detectives?
Jesus, you drunk little dick. So they, you know, case closed. Right?
Case closed.
So they're off the case. They're moving on. I mean, it's still a cold case because they haven't found the killer, right? So it's sort of open, but they're not...
They're not on it anymore?
No, they're not.
Yes. Well, the story of Diddles and Watts is over?
Diddles and Watts went off to be the inspiration for Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They moved to Florida.
Biddles and Watts. That's a good one, right? I just came up with that.
Biddles and Watts should be the title of this episode.
I think
Biddles and Watts is a good title.
I think it has to be. So in 2005, Larry Trotter was at a seminar for advanced forensic techniques. At the seminar, he brought up the Eastburn murders as like a case study for things that he was trying to explain. And so while he was talking to a journalist, Trotter found out that there was semen taken at the scene, and it was preserved at the Cumberland County Forensic Lab. So he thought,
Trotter was like, hey, can I see that?
Can I get some of that fucking juice? Sometimes I say stuff, guys, that I can't even say. Like, even pussy. I can't even say pussy, but like I'll do it sometimes for an effect, and then I immediately feel shame.
That was my favorite part of the episode so far.
I immediately feel bad about it.
Can I get some juice?
Let me get some of that juice.
Give me some of the juice. So anyways, that's basically what Trotter said. So anyways, he thought, he can use DNA testing to find the killer.
Mm.
So in 2006, a forensic blood test found... that over 100% match. They found a match that
it's
was
the same jizz.
What?
His jizz and the jizz at the crime scene, the same jizz?
No, it was a blood test that she was talking about.
In the jizz.
Whoa. What are you fucking talking about, dude? All right, now maybe there's other dum-dums in the audience that maybe think like you, so I'm going to start over, brother. We're going right from the beginning. Okay, so the Eastburn murders. No. listen. So
the year is 1985.
Yeah, so it's 2005. Larry Trotter is at this seminar. They're talking about the Eastburn murders.
Yeah.
He finds out that they actually preserved. You interrupt me one more time, you motherfucker. No. He finds out that they actually took semen at the scene, which I actually find is interesting back in the day. Like, even in, like, 60s and, you know, murders even before that, they were preserving, like, semen and blood before there was even an inkling that they would be able to test
it. Yeah, before they had the ability to use that to match it to anything else. The forethought of
that is crazy, that's, right? Yeah. That they thought someday in the future, maybe somebody would be able to test this. So he finds out that they preserved the semen from the crime.
Okay.
From the crime scene.
Okay.
Of the Eastburn murders. The one we've been talking about this whole time!
Yeah. No, okay. I'm following.
Okay, okay. So he was like, okay, so now they can test stuff like that. Why don't we just test this semen? We'll be able to find who definitely murdered this family, right? So they found a 100%, over 100% match. I don't know how they do over 100, but it was like 100.2, whatever. I don't know how that's possible.
That's a little fucking weird.
I don't do math. I only do murder. So, and guess who did it match?
It's our guy.
Tim Hennis.
Tim Hennis.
25 years out, dude.
And it's his now, cum.
Yeah. So now.
102% sure. That's what.
102% sure that it's Tim Hennis. I don't know if you saw that, if you watched Trotter was Death like, Row.
I've tasted this before. Yeah. This is Tim Hennis.
That's what I was going to ask. Well, How did they do it? They tasted it from the 80s, and then they were like, come back here.
Yeah.
Tasted it now. Like, yeah. It's the same.
Oh my gosh. I remember it like all comes back to them. Yep. So that's how they tested, and they found out
comes back.
That it was Tim Hennis. And in the, if you watch the Death Row story, so there's a good, overview of this. They did it really well on Death Row Stories. And they, you know, they have the Biddles and Watts and the detectives all talk like this, right? And they're like, I told Gary Eastburn, you sitting down? You know what I mean?
Oh, when he made the phone call.
He had to tell Gary, guess who it matched? You know what I mean? You're like, fucking A.
And right away he's like, oh, Tim Hennis.
Tim Hennis, right? Duh. I mean, why else would you be telling me to sit down and that you have the, you have the killer? So, Tim Hennis. So, now what, right? Because if we know anything from the Fifth Amendment, but mostly that Ashley Judd vehicle that we all love so much called Double Jeopardy.
Great film.
Great film. Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones looking hot.
100% legally accurate.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There's no way that they would find any loopholes to try her again.
No.
So anyways, the point is he was already acquitted, so they can't try you twice for the same crime, right? The spirit of the law is that they don't want to try someone 20 times for the same thing. But in this kind of instance, it's like, can we, though, do it one more time?
You can generally find a loophole.
Yeah. So this is where the military does them dirty, dude, which I don't like. And look, I want them to find the guy. I want them to do that. But I don't like how they did it, right? So the military, the new detectives on the scene, reach out to the military and ask them to call Hennis back to active duty, just without saying anything. Just be like, "Hey, I know you're retired. We have something for you," so that he can be active duty again, and they can try him in military court
instead of putting him on another normal trial. They're able to legally court-martial him.
Because otherwise,
the UCMJ, as opposed to, you know, facing the issues with the whole double jeopardy thing.
Yeah.
So otherwise, I think he would have, if he was a civilian, I think he would have gotten away with it, right?
I don't think there's any other way. The only other way that they...
state and federal, maybe? If he's tried in state.
Do you want to get away with it, though?
Like, you can do...
No, but...
Well, no, he's the hero of our story, Joel.
Yeah.
Follow the story.
Yeah, the Constitution is the hero. No. Like, yeah, no, if I was Dan Holloway right now, I'd be like, nope.
You can only, I think you can only be tried for the same crime as a civilian in like a federal trial, and then you can be taken to like a civil court.
Civil court.
But a civil court isn't going
to You can't go to jail for that. You're just going to have to pay money.
Like a monetary fine.
Yeah.
That they don't even enforce that hard from my
experience. I know. Again, with poor OJ. That's what they did with him, that poor guy.
He just poor man.
Ugh. And they had to just get him in civil. I don't know if they could have, like I said, I don't know if they could have done federal and state. I'm sure, again, if they have 100% match, I'm sure they'd find some other loophole, or maybe not.
Yeah, possibly. But I think the defense would be able to use that also to, I mean, just keep kicking the can down the road for long enough that he would be dead from old age before he actually ever went to trial.
Mm. Right. So, so when he came back and arrived for active duty, he was there for a month, and they ended up court-martialing and arresting him on 3 counts of murder. The rape case was statute of limitations, so they just got him on 3. Yeah.
That's like the worst Rambo fucking reboot ever, where it's like, look,
I know,
we got this one last mission that we need you to do. We know that you're retired. You're taking care of your family. We just need you to come back this one time.
You've been exemplary. You've been an awesome guy.
Your country needs you.
Yeah, we've given you a bunch of awards. You've always been our guy. Come on back, bud.
One last mission.
We got you.
Okay, now why don't you take a seat over there?
Yeah. Now we want you to talk to someone over here. Yeah. It's not us. Not us. But, yeah. So, statute of limitations was up on the rape case, but Hennis immediately appealed, obviously, because he's just like, what the fuck, bro? And said that the case was not in the military's jurisdiction because it was off base, which, like, technically he was, and he was retired, and all these things.
Yeah, but at the time that the crime was committed, he was still enlisted, so that would still
technically fall under the UCMJ. That's what I wanted to ask you. So, like, to be in their jurisdiction, does it have to be on base?
No,
he just has to be enlisted.
If at the time the crime was enlisted, once you're enlisted, you are technically the property of the U.S. government, and you'd fall under the UCMJ. So if
wherever you are and wherever the crime is,
yeah, wherever you are, whatever crime is committed, anything
they
like that,
try you in military court.
Yeah, you can still be court-martialed for it. The sneaky part was tricking him into going back to active duty.
Not cool.
Not cool.
If you want to get him.
He is the culprit.
Unless he's the killer.
And if he is the killer, then that was...
if the cum matches the drapes.
Right.
Is that how that goes?
That's what my grandpa used to always say.
Always. Come over here, Coop. Sit on my lap.
Don't mind me. Let me tell you something. Now, if the cum matches the drapes...
And then he just pushed you off onto the
Every day. He said the N-word a bunch of times. My grandpa was a great fella.
Oh, love him. Old school. You know what I mean?
Classic.
Vintage. Yeah.
Classic old school racist.
I love vintage racist.
Salt of the earth. Right? Greatest generation.
Because it wasn't racist back then. Anyway.
Back in the good old days.
Yeah. Miss those.
No, you don't.
I know. So all his appeals. Just kidding. Only against Asians.
Now you sound like my mom.
Right? But they, come on.
Oh, no, you could have a long conversation with my mom.
Oh, I would love it.
Oh, if you're joking, then...
I mean, I am joking unless she wants to talk. You know what I'm saying? Behind closed doors, not on a microphone. Calm down. It's where we do our racism. Right? Anyways, all the appeals were denied. And with the DNA evidence, it was basically a shut case, no matter what he said. They tried to say that he had consensual sex with her, but it was like a little bit too late. Why didn't you say it in the first, you know?
Yeah,
I
would think that would have helped the defense a little bit if you said, like, oh, yeah, I had sex with her. That's why you found a whole bunch of my semen all over the drapes.
Yeah, but I left, and then the killer came in right behind me or whatever.
She was a whore.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of, again, victim blaming.
It's what they call the whore defense.
There was all kinds of semen there.
That's what they call blame the dead mother for the crime, basically. So they tried a lot of defenses, but none of them worked. And the jury took 3 hours to find him guilty on all counts. He was sentenced to death.
3 hours.
Boom. That's not a long time. So they basically, the first time, wasn't he sentenced after like 10 hours?
Yeah, 10 hours of deliberation the first time, 3 hours the second time.
Yeah. They really think this guy did it. So he was sentenced to death and remains on death row in Kansas to this day. So Tim Hennis is the only person that has been tried for his life three times, which is fucking crazy. Now, what are you saying insane. That happened recently? It concludes recently.
Oh, no, because when he was still finally, appealing? Yeah, when he was finally convicted, that was like 2019, wasn't it?
Yes, so 2006, I think in 2010, he was finally convicted, right? So, but he keeps trying to appeal.
Oh, okay, I think the most recent appeal was in 2019.
Oh, he keeps trying to appeal, and it just keeps getting denied. Okay.
What if the cum was planted?
Now, there was, and I didn't hear it. This case is very complicated, and there's a bunch of different articles and iterations through the years. So, like, some things will be somewhere but not others. But there was something in there that the lab that tested his semen earlier, I guess years earlier, had been in a scandal about switching.
Oh, because one of the...
Yeah.
It was one of the technicians.
One of the technicians was like...
They figured out that she lied in court.
Yeah, she was basically, if a detective went to her and was like, hey, I need this to match, she would do it.
Yeah.
And so the problem with that happening at a lab is that every other DNA case in that lab is then taken into question. So then all those people that are in jail now file appeals because they're like, well, mine was fucked up too. Yeah. And so
she was just tired at work, and she had like she was marking each one with the stamp, like at the grocery store.
Yeah. Yeah. Ksh, ksh, yeah. Ksh, ksh, basically.
And was off by one. So every single one was one off.
Yeah. And so basically, that discredits that lab, but find it hard to believe, right? That they would, I don't know. It was years earlier. They found it out. Usually that person gets taken care of. But again, the lab forever will have kind of that tarnish, that ding on their record. So that's what they kind of tried to say. But at the same time, it didn't go. It didn't work.
A lot of the other stuff in the case fits way too accurately. The things that confuse me about it overall is he commits this one insanely brutal murder.
Thank you.
Where if you know all of the details of how the bodies were found.
Which Joel is going to on the way home.
Oh, yeah. You're going to hear all about it.
Mm-hmm.
It really seems like either a crime of passion or somebody who has done this before.
Or that will do it again.
Yes, exactly, that will do it again. Because to do something that brutally, that takes a different type of person. It's not something that you just kind of dabble in on the weekends every now and then.
Exactly. And that's my... We're in discussion time now. So that's my issue with it. Because everything that we've ever learned or know about true crime, serial killers, crimes of passion, overkill, all of this is that there has never been, I guess besides this guy, somebody that out of nowhere, not having any connection to a family whatsoever, walks in and just murders in this way, especially with a wife.
Murders
that
a mother and two children.
While he is an awesome, apparently a good husband and great father to his wife and child that's the same, close to the same age,
attractive,
at home.
Handsome guy.
So,
because a lot of serial killers are they're like ugly, right? Deprived.
There's a couple good
ones. Oh no,
ones.
I mean Ted Bundy
famously
charismatic and attractive. Like, that was one of the things that
helped him commit
murders, is people naturally trusted him.
Yeah, too skinny for me, but ladies liked him, I guess. But he was also,
it was a different time.
Yeah, you know, they didn't find out where the good stuff is.
That was back when women were still attracted to men that drove Volkswagen Beetles.
Exactly, and didn't like think, maybe I should.
And he had no other record, like bad, anything else on his record before that?
He bounced some checks.
Well, clean record,
and then getting out and being like an exemplary person without any. Normally, something else would have happened, right? He would try something again, or something would come up. He would get pulled over. Whatever. It's like the Stephen Avery thing.
Yeah.
Like, he gets out, found innocent, and then
just does it again.
Fucking kills some chick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you feel invincible. So He didn't do anything else before, anything else after. I just find it really hard to believe, but at the same time, the coincidence and, you know, all the evidence, circumstantial, money. Is still looking bad, right?
Yeah. But so what is the other option? What else could it have been? Like, if he was there, if he did meet her, was he banging her? You know, has he admitted something like that where he was like, look, I didn't kill her, but we were secretly hooking up?
The option is maybe the lab was corrupt, right?
Well, either the lab was corrupt or the defense that he used where it's like, look, we did have sex, but it was consensual. And then some other random person shows up afterwards and brutally murders the family.
No.
That's also a little weird. I mean,
be someone casing the place. And they're
yes,
like,
there's
they
also
got
this. There was
the
an
ad.
Yes, there was an ad out in the paper. So was it just like he was one of the people that came and he wasn't the weirdo murderer, but the next person that came was?
Somebody else showed up looking for the dog and was God, like, oh, hey,
watching,
I noticed yeah. that you're it. By yourself and I'm a sick fuck.
I don't know. But like, again, the crazy. And then also there would have been other crimes like that. Somewhere else in the neighborhood.
I know.
Some other time.
Considering the brutality of the crime, that's the part that throws me off the most, is the brutality of the crime.
It just goes against everything that we know. And how does that person live in society afterwards as a normal person? Like, everything I know about it would be like, he would be a fucking weirdo.
Yeah. And have you watched, like, interviews with him talking? He seems normal.
I actually haven't. I don't know if they have.
There's like very brief little clips that I was able to find, but aside from, like, they haven't done any
Ed
Kemper style interviews. He seems like a
normal dude,
clean cut, straightforward guy. One of the things that was used against him is the fact that he was egotistical in his initial interactions with the police.
No, because he only did it one time. Iceman. Like,
oh, dude. And if you listen to interviews with Richard Kuklinski. Even if he wasn't talking about killing people, you'd be like, this motherfucker's killed people. Hmm. You can just tell by his demeanor.
Crazy.
But
so
one of the things that was used against him is he was egotistical when he went to be interviewed by the police for the first time. As soon as he left and the press was around, then he was covering his face. And to me, it seemed more like, oh, shit, this is serious. I don't want this... attached to me, because in the court of public opinion, regardless of whether or not you're guilty of the crime, if all of these people see the press taking pictures of you, they see your face showing up in the newspapers,
they're going to hate you.
Yeah, you're going to have that stuck to you for a long time, regardless of whether or not you're guilty. Yeah.
And he was very aware of that. Even in the trial, he was asking his lawyer, like, what do I do? Like, if I'm super emotional, they won't, you know, they'll think that I'm, you know, faking. If I have no emotion, they'll think I did it. Like, asking, like, what do I do outwardly? So there's stuff like that kind of you can go either way as far as whether he was guilty or not. But again, like, didn't seem like no one else said that he was like a sociopath or had any other weird things that happened or like, you know, pretty much if you talk to anyone about, like, let's say a husband that murdered his wife, it's like the neighbors, the friends, everyone will come out and have stories of times that were like weird or that they saw and he was like, you know, was acting weird at the funeral or something, where people will come out and be like, yeah, dude, like, it was just, you know.
Yeah, and Hennis's family, they've got
stuck by
nothing bad to say about him.
Yeah.
For over two decades at this point, they've got nothing bad to say about him.
Anyone that met him, anyone he worked with, anyone was just like,
his whole military
awesome.
Career, which they can be very stringent about those things. Yeah. Like,
and they'll keep records of every time that you fuck up or do something weird or whatever. And so, you know, if we go around the horn and say what we think, to me, it just doesn't. I don't really like how they got him finally, and it just doesn't seem like there's enough forensic real forensic evidence like blood or, I mean, the fingerprints aren't matching, the hair isn't matching, everything else at the scene is not. But somehow magically...
The pubic hair doesn't match.
No.
Well, he's got gray pubic hair now, so...
Yeah, so maybe.
Which does complicate things a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they have a whole other forensic... section is called old balls, but
they but, go through and they yeah, paint the pubic hair with just for men and then retest
other,
it.
Yeah, it's a whole other section of the lab.
The semen sample matching is
the.
I mean, that's the.
It's the only the real
primary
thing
piece of evidence that right. got him convicted.
Right.
That being said,
if there
said,
was no semen, what would you say? Give me that juice. No. But like if you if there was no
I would be like hurry up and finish.
If that didn't happen, what would you think about the other evidence? Like it's pretty it's also pretty.
If that didn't happen, a lot of it seems very circumstantial.
Circumstantial, you know, eyewitness of like weirdos. There is a couple like taking the members only jacket in after. Again, I always say like either you're the most unlucky person in the world. And you did this weird thing the day after the murder, you know, or you did it.
That's also really weird.
Burning stuff.
But
burning stuff.
But I fall back. Well, I mean, what was he burning in that situation?
Maybe clothes. Maybe he wasn't wearing the jacket during the crime. I don't
why
know.
Why would he also like, why would he wash the members only jacket instead of burn
he
that too
it.
To just
yeah.
get
he loved it.
Yeah, it was
loved
a members
it,
only
man.
Jacket.
He was a member.
And it was the 80s.
You can't get those twice.
But the fact that the like the core piece of evidence for his conviction was
a cum shot.
The semen sample.
Yeah.
I'm a tall white guy with a mustache.
Sure. Better
I,
be careful
I,
out
I
there.
I can tell you for a fact that you will find my semen in a lot of surprising places, and I hope
right.
to God that doesn't get me convicted in a crime at
right?
some point.
You better watch it.
I got to be real careful. I got to document like where I'm
yeah.
going, at what time, who
yes.
I'm with.
What if he jerked off in his car before he went in to get the dog? And it was
why
on his hand.
Why would it be in her vagina?
Yeah.
So they swabbed it
Did he shake her hand in a very awkward way?
And then she
way?
Just stuck her, right in front of him, just stuck her hand in there.
Know,
possibly.
Is that where it was? It was in her vagina.
Yeah,
so
that's
they took like a rape
found.
Kit, essentially, and got
oh.
So him. Honestly, him being an attractive man going to meet a lonely wife, whose husband is verifiably out of town a lot, where they even had like a planned time of day where they would call each other on a regular
yeah.
basis to keep their relationship going. Her having a little something on the side wouldn't be that surprising in most situations. And
but that was the only time he went there. He never was like, well, he can't because he's got his own
no,
wife and family. He's not going to admit that he was banging her for like. 2 years.
Yeah. Well, also that was like their only documented interaction. As far as I know, they
yeah.
had never had any
no,
sort
that
of interaction
was not
before.
Explored at all. Hmm. It was literally just he went there, got the dog, and then
came back, killed her.
So yeah. So they're saying is you know she called according to him she called on Thursday, which was the day of the murder. So she called to make sure the dog was doing okay. Is that when he was like, what up?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What she's calling. She must be interested.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. But again, yeah, if we're going around the horn, you say, did it? Too many things against him?
I think that considering the evidence, I'll go with the jury's decision. I'll say that he did it. I don't know if that's factually true because I wasn't there for it, but I'll go with the judicial
better
system.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Company man.
I think he did it too. I think it's like it's the same as cheating. There's cheaters and then there's someone who cheats. He fucked up. He did it one time, probably was like, "Fuck, I'm never doing that again." So he kept the straight arrow and he was like, "I'm never doing that again." So he's not a
it's
cheater. He just cheated one time.
I'm never murdering a woman and her two children again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a one-time thing.
Yeah, let's get into that. So usually when people murder for the first time, we've heard from serial killers that try their first time for example, BTK, that was like the first time you don't really know what you're doing and you like, you just like, you know, you're not good at it. It's harder than you think, right? You have to apply more pressure. It's harder to cut something. People are fighting back. So maybe the multiple
was saying the same thing.
Yeah. It's like they want to do it, but you know, it's like prolapsing probably. But anyway.
first time
hard to do.
Last time just happens naturally.
Boom. So maybe that is like the crazy overkill of it. Cause it's like the precision serial killers can just like bound, slit, we out, right?
Yeah.
He freaked out.
He like, they weren't dying and it like wasn't working and he had to like stab them multiple times, slitting throats, like possibly. Otherwise, like if he was skilled, it would be like you would know exactly where to stab, how, the pressure, and it wouldn't be such an insanely gruesome scene, right?
Yeah.
That also explains the partial cleanup too.
Right, because you're like,
it's like, oh, fuck.
He's like, oh, I'm going to clean everything up. Then he's like, wait, shit.
Do I clean up?
Maybe they did have a thing. And then he was like, I'm going to ruin my life. I cheated on my wife. This is awful.
Again.
So maybe they hooked up first. And then afterwards, he was like, I got to kill them all.
I think, again, whoever it was that did it, it was something like that. Someone was screaming. A child woke up. They freaked out and just like, you know, went crazy. Probably go into rape or like have sex with, ended up having to rape, and then the kids like wake up, they're walking in, they're pointing, whatever, and you just like freak out and murder them, lose it. But again, it would be the first time in everything that I've, you know, read in every case that someone.
The girl under the Star Wars blanket. She was in bed and she was hiding underneath the covers.
Right. Her sister was next to her, so they're thinking that one of them was trying to quiet the other.
So I guess that if Hennis was guilty, then maybe they had seen him go in and he wanted to make sure that they couldn't talk.
How do you quench that appetite? If that's what you do, if that's what you need to do is kill people in that way, you can't just do it one time. It's a compulsion.
Yeah.
It's something that you can't stop. There's serial killers or murderers that stop for what, like 10 years? They can kind of deal with it for, but they always will be like, I fucking got to do it again.
Yeah.
Unless it was absolutely horrible for him.
Right. Maybe he thought it would be cooler than it was.
Yeah.
And then he's like, this was not cool.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Like, that was really, things got out of hand, huh?
It's like trying mushrooms for the first time.
Yeah, Never trying that again. Ooh. One time, plenty for me.
Plenty. So get your shit together. Keep on the straight and narrow. Yeah.
All right.
Well.
Wait, maybe he killed a bunch more. He just got, that was the first one, and he got really fucking good at it after that, because he is the best.
Possibly.
Yeah.
What if it comes out later? That'd be cool.
Here's another thing I will say.
You know,
if he didn't do
it,
if he didn't do it, fuck.
He got royally
fucked. His life is fucked.
Yeah, even if he gets exonerated a second time.
Oh, still. Just like, his life got completely fucked up.
Yeah, that does suck if he didn't do it.
If he didn't
do it. Poor bastard.
I know. Kind of like OJ.
Yeah.
But OJ's out. We finally made it right with OJ.
Thank God.
Thank God, that poor guy. Now we can just play golf and look for the killer. Look for the real killer.
They ever find him? The real killer?
The real killer? No. And it seems weird because we have all that forensic, testing now. It's like...
Yeah, I mean, OJ even wrote a book about how it probably went. But those damn Goldmans just took the books off the shelves and took all the money for themselves.
Goldman's suing him again.
Again?
Because he's not getting any money.
Wait, what?
He's not getting the money, because they took him to civil court.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, not paying. And he owes him a bunch of money.
And so OJ's just not paying him?
The money from the book is still going to OJ?
No, no. I'm saying, like, just in general, when he went to civil, you know, civil court, and I think they awarded whatever, right? The money from the book was not enough. He still owes him a good amount of money that he's not paying.
That upstanding citizen isn't paying off his debts.
I know, and he sees them at these nice golf courses, and he's like, huh, kind of seems like you shouldn't have money to do that, because you should be giving it to me and my family. But, so it's just going to, and that, again, poor Goldman, the real poor Goldman, like, has to keep fucking doing this shit.
Jesus.
And he's going to deal with it forever. I would love for him to be able to let it go, but he can't, you know? Anyways, thank you guys.
Yeah.
This was fun.
We did it. We have a crime show.
In the can.
This is my first, you know how long I've wanted to do a crime show? It's my first crime show. Now look, it's a little bit like Hennis's first murder. Clunky, but.
Clunky, questionable.
Questionable, brutal. Lots of semen, but we got through it, and I'm excited.
No,
I would
too.
Like to know what the next episode is, but we will, you know, we're going to figure it out.
And this is awesome.
Well, we've
wanted to do a show with you for since we moved here.
Oh, yeah. Right? We've wanted
I'm
you
excited.
To.
Our favorite episodes on Iconoblast are the ones you're on.
Me too.
We've you're wanted you to be a full-time people. Fixture on Iconoblast, like, since we started doing the show.
I know. Yeah, maybe
so now
we'll...
we got it.
Now
so
we
this
got it.
This right here is actually just a bit of a ploy for us. To, what we're going to start doing is we're going to start stacking Crime Corner and Iconoblast back to back, and just be like, oh hey, you know we're doing Crime Corner anyway. You
yeah. Anyway, so welcome to the Iconoblast podcast.
Oh,
we'll just,
okay.
We'll go straight into Iconoblast.
Yeah.
And you know the format might change a little bit. Coop is a little bit better at talking and reading. Which I'm not.
You did great.
I appreciate
Thanks.
That, but I don't believe that one bit.
No, you are. That voice. Butter,
yeah, it's
dude.
Good. The...
We need to hear more of the voice. But anyways, we're going to figure it out. You guys are going to figure out with us. And thank you for joining us.
Oh, quick teaser, upcoming topics. We're going to be talking about Carl Pan's room. We're going to
yes.
be talking about Ted. Well, we're going to do some of the greats and
yep.
then some of
and
the
some
lesser
of the...
knowns, which the other... I think the one that we should do next was the other lesser known murder, the kidnapping. What's his
the
name?
Steven Stainer.
Steven
and
Stainer.
The military
brother.
Guy that wore the bras and stuff.
Oh and
that
the,
too?
The Canadian. I think he was Canadian, actually.
Oh, never mind. We don't do any Canadians.
No. This is an all American show. Albert
yes.
Fish. I mean, we'll do a lot of the big ones.
Yes.
Which. Carl Pan's room and Albert Fish are going to be kind of hard to handle because we're staying away from the
I
super
don't
gruesome
think
details.
Joel can fucking handle
I'm
the
not
fish,
looking forward
dude.
To it.
Oh,
Albert
oh.
Fish. I actually don't know if anyone can
Is that
handle
the one with
it.
The
we're
needles?
Need,
yeah,
yeah
the,
we're going
oh.
we're going to need people to like request it, right? We need to know that everyone's in.
Everybody needs to be ready for it
because it's
well, even if
it's
if
good
we do
content,
a deep dive into Carl Pan's room, like.
No,
his
I know.
His
you
description
keep
of not just the murders that he committed, but the things that happened to him personally.
Yeah,
like what, for example,
we might need we. That's something else that we can talk about on the car ride home.
On the car ride home,
oh, God. We gotta.
I know
we
you
gotta test the audience and just see how strong their stomachs are.
Yeah. We just need to see. And then again, like I say, I don't want to do stuff with kids. But then Steven Stainer was a kid when he was taken, but the story is more when he's older. So
yeah.
We'll go into it a little bit, but I'm excited, guys.
Me too.
Really excited.
Me too. Lots of good content. Lots of fucked up people out there just giving us good content.
Thankfully. I'd love for some new ones to happen. Get out there and start killing, guys. Make
yeah,
it
pro,
weird.
We're pro kill people.
Yeah, because you know we're gonna run out of stuff.
We
eventually.
Will help. You
I think
succeed.
That should be the sign off for every single episode. Get out there and
Get
start
out
killing.
Get out there and start killing, guys. Freeze.
Save big on brunch for mom. All in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.